ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. A week after Hamas attacked Israel, killing at least 1,300 people, anticipation is building that Israel is going to invade Gaza. IDF Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus said,
around the Gaza Strip, as have been for many days, are Israeli reserve soldiers in formation that are getting ready for the next stage of operations.
Foreign citizens in Gaza are now being allowed to exit through Egypt, but thousands still in Gaza say they have nowhere to go. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's in Saudi Arabia.
It's vitally important, and I know that our countries agree, that we work together to make sure that, to the best of our ability, this conflict does not spread to other places.
There's still no Speaker of the House, as Jim Jordan, the Republican choice, has not yet gotten enough support. And there's a deal in place to end the labor dispute between 85,000 workers in the Kaiser Permanente healthcare chain. This is ABC News. Republican presidential hopefuls were in New Hampshire on Friday. One of them, the former governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, continued his attacks on former President Trump, citing his election lies.
I've known Donald Trump for 22 years. Believe you me, if he had the evidence to prove the election was stolen, we would have seen it years ago. And he hasn't presented it because he doesn't have it.
New York's attorney general says some police officers will not face charges after the immolation of a man 2 years ago.
In graphic video, 29-year-old Jason Jones can be seen dousing himself with hand sanitizer at a police station in Catskill, New York. In trying to control him, one officer fires a stun gun, setting the flammable hand sanitizer on fire. Jones was taken to a hospital where he died after 6 weeks of intensive care. Now, New York's Attorney General Letitia James said in a report that the officers will not face charges, while recommending that officers receive new training on stun gun safety. Mark Remillard, ABC News, New York.
Brian Clark, ABC News.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Wisconsin is one of only two states that don't take full advantage of federal incentives to expand Medicaid coverage for new mothers and their babies. As Mike Moan reports, that may soon change.
Wisconsin lawmakers face renewed calls to approve a plan that would help new mothers who have limited resources maintain health coverage. Over the past few years, the federal government has opened more pathways for states to extend postpartum Medicaid coverage for up to 12 months. Wisconsin is one of just two states seeking a more limited approach. State Senator Joan Malwig is co-sponsor of a bill for the full 12 months of coverage, saying the current 90-day plan awaiting federal approval is helpful, but doesn't go far enough in providing consistency.
What we've seen is with new moms, when they have to switch over to find other coverage, they're losing the care provider that they've had during their pregnancy.
She says they then scramble for a new provider who has to get caught up in any chronic health conditions they're dealing with. The bill has cleared the state Senate with bipartisan support, and its sponsors are hopeful about its chances in the Assembly. However, some skeptics worry about higher eligibility thresholds. But supporters say a full extension can help to reduce overall health care costs down the road by establishing better outcomes for new moms and their babies. Clinical pharmacist Anne Mae Minichiello says the time to wait is over, with research emerging about higher cardiovascular risks for pregnant women.
Routine follow-up doctor's visits, blood pressure management, all those things, it could really capture a lot of patients who would fall under the radar.
Women who have high blood pressure prior to pregnancy may be twice as likely to develop cardiovascular disease. This is Mike Mullen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
David Drake is a professor and the Extension Wildlife Specialist at UW-Madison. Greg, tell him what you call him.
I now refer to you as Jane's birder boyfriend.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Whoa!
Now I have competition.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, God, I am wounded.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Aldous Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Aldous Show on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Helen Brand. Today, we are talking about a topic that I cannot wait to learn more about. I have to admit, I have not experienced caregiving for a parent. I definitely don't know how I would have done that while raising young children, but that is what we are going to learn more about today. My guest is Christy Byrne Yates. Christy is a licensed educational psychologist, has a master's degree in counseling psychology, and a professional credentials in education and school psychology. She is an author, speaker, and coach. Her book, Building a Legacy of Love, Thriving in the Sandwich Generation, recounts her journey as a working mother of two who also managed the care of her parents, both whom had some form of dementia. She incorporates meditation, mindfulness, and evidence-based mind-body practices into her work. And this is really a topic that everyone should pay attention to because we don't necessarily plan on caring for multiple people at once. You know, what probably starts out as just helping out here and there continues to grow as the needs continue to grow. And then before you know it, another family member requires support as well. So with that being said, let's jump right in. Welcome, Christy. And before we dig into the topic of the sandwich generation, I want to make sure I got that right. Can you explain a little bit more about what exactly that means and what are some of the unique stressors that are involved with it?
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here with you tonight, Liza. So what is the sandwich generation? I know it's not a term I came up with. It's been around actually since the mid 1980s. And it's really describing people who are parents of children under the age of 18, at least one child under the age of 18 in the home. And they're also then tasked with care for a aging parent or ailing parent, or could be some other person, right? It could be a spouse that's ailing or terminally ill or some sort of thing. That's typically where the term comes from. So kind of those two generations, and you're sort of caught between them. But it's broader than that in practicality, right? A lot of people feel sandwiched between different things. So when I work with different people, I hear lots of folks say, well, I'm sandwiched, but I don't have children, but I have a thriving business that I'm really growing. And I'm like, hey, you want to call yourself sandwiched? That's fine. You know, so there's lots of different ways people describe it. But typically it's that squeeze. And where I sort of focus a lot of attention is on the impact to parents and parenting and children. Not to say that all the care for an aging loved one isn't important, but I just bring this other piece in too.
Well, that makes sense. And thanks for clarifying that, because I first was thinking, oh, I'm going to be a part of the sandwich generation, but not really. I don't think I shared my story with you. So I have a 19-year-old son that is on the autism spectrum. And like I said, I'm not caring for my parents yet, knock on wood. But there will be a time, right, where I am caring for my parents and supporting my son, who is already an adult. So I was wondering if I fell in the sandwich generation or if I fell into some other food category.
No, I would definitely say that. And that's a really good point. There are a lot of folks too who have other people they might be caring for. So I come from the world of special education and working with kids with special needs. And for sure, there are a number of folks who may need additional care for the rest of their lives. It could be a sibling that you've been caring for. It could be a lot of things and people that you're caring for. So yeah, absolutely. It's being squished between, you know, really two different groups that need you or people that need you.
Yeah. And is the generational, yeah, the generational part of it is I think a component of that. And because I had never been in that experience, I had to spend some time just letting that sink in, you know, just remembering what it was like when my kids were little. And I cannot imagine having to care for my parents at the same time. I know on your website you address some of the additional stressors, but is there more to speak to that? You know, how that impacts one when you're dealing with multiple generations of caregiving?
Right. I would say some of the primary stressors are not enough. It feels like there's not enough time. And really, is there ever enough time for most of the things we do? So, but it definitely feels like there's more of a time crunch, more of a financial crunch sometimes. Many Americans are also contributing to the care financially of parents or siblings or someone else. And that can be a stressor. It's also very stressful at times to be seeing your children growing up and becoming more independent, and you're that's what you're going for, while your parents are becoming more dependent, right? They're losing some independence at times. If we're talking about someone who you're caring for who's aging, and whether they have dementia or just normal natural aging, and what sometimes happens, and you kind of talked about this in your intro, it's, you may not know when this is going to happen, right? And so sometimes aging happens normally and naturally. It's what happens. But then it can really go into overdrive with something like a cancer diagnosis or other medical crisis or an accident or falls. People fall and you break a hip, and my goodness, that changes lots of things. So all kinds of things, illness, injury, can change the trajectory of someone's final years. So you're not necessarily, you can't predict that. Whereas with your children, you have some level of, you know, you kind of know, right? They're in first grade, they're in fifth, you know, you can, even if they have special needs, there's some level of expectation of what might be needed for you, what you might be needed to do.
Yeah. And they're still always striving to become more independent, regardless of where they're at. And I like how you touched on that. You don't know. And that's one thing that I always want to stress, you know, well, there's a lot of people, I'm not a caregiver, you know, this doesn't apply to me. And I'm thinking yet, because it could happen to anybody at any time. And, you know, when it comes to aging and the normal aging process, well, one thing that I have learned is when I spend time with my grandma, who is 91 years old, that woman will not ask for help, regardless. And for someone who has not yet had the role of being a caregiver for their parents, what are those signs that my parents may need more help? Because right now, I'm just waiting for them to come out of the house with no pants. When they come out with no pants, then I know, okay, I'm up. But I bet you have a better answer than that. So what's your take?
So really, we're looking at, this is a great question, and it's things like those activities of daily living. You said coming out without pants. That's like an activity of daily living, right? Getting yourself dressed. So not being able to do that would be a big clue. It would be things like starting to miss appointments, or, oh, we were going to meet here, Mom, and then not there. Or they're starting to shrink their world. We don't want to do anything anymore. We don't want to go places anymore. Or it could be things like forgetting to take medication, not following through on that kind of thing. It could be not able to do different caregiving things for themselves. It's losing some of that independence are some of the things that you might start to see. And paying attention to those. That's a real key indicator that somebody might need extra help. So there's a number, there's a whole list of what are called activities of daily living, but there's those things that we do as independent adults that we're skilled at doing. And then those are starting to not be done well. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're not washing our clothes on a regular basis. Maybe you visit the home and it's just a mess and that's not typical.
Gotcha.
So, things like that.
Yes, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, I'm curious in your work that you do, if this question ever comes up, do you have any advice that you would give for a person caring for someone for whom they've had a strained relationship with in the past?
I do, and I'll tell you it's not a simple answer, but this is very common, and when I speak to people, I try to be very cognizant of that there are a lot of people who are caring for someone that they did have a fractured relationship with. So when I say things like caring for your loved one, that might really be a trigger for someone. Or, you know, you're a caregiver. There are a lot of people who would prefer to use language like, I manage the care of my person. So it's not everybody had this wonderful, beautiful relationship. So it is important to be aware of that. But they're rising to the challenge to help in whatever way they can. My biggest piece of advice is, in that situation is, don't ever force yourself to care for somebody that you can't reasonably do that well and with kindness. Mm. And don't force a sibling or someone else to care for someone that they don't want to care for. That's a recipe for disaster. And can even lead to abuse. So it's okay to say, I can't do certain things. I'm going to set some limits. That's really important.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure that resonated with a lot of people and hopefully, you know, gave them permission to acknowledge that it's not going to always work out. I'm speaking with author Christy Byrne Yates, the author of Building a Legacy of Love, Thriving in the Sandwich Generation. When we come back, I am going to ask Christy about the valuable lessons that she learned during her caregiving journey.
But you can't see, cause you've been somewhere else. You can't cry, cause you look broke down. But you're crying anyway, cause you're all broke down. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
Bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events. Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players.
We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Love your hometown? Don't miss the Devil's Advocates radio show on the road for the very first Fall in Love Hometown Tour 2023.
Jade Monkey, Diamond Crute, we're going to be there. Live broadcast, party all night.
That's right. The tour stops in Madison at the Jade Monkey on Cottage Grove Road Tuesday, October 17th. It all starts with a live broadcast at 4.
Road trip! With the Devil's Advocates Fall in Love Hometown Tour 2023 on your local Civic Media radio station and the app. A no-holds-barred political conversation. That's Matt Flynn Direct.
Gerrymandering is not democracy, it's commie government. It's fake government. You have somebody that gets 48% of the vote and they get 67% of the seats. That is not democracy, it's fake democracy. It's the appearance of law without the reality or the actuality of law.
Matt Flynn Direct, weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hallenbrand, and I've been talking with Christy Byrne-Yates, author, speaker, and coach, who has her own experience of being part of the sandwich generation. Christy, I have some more questions I want to get back to you on that I missed before the break, but I would love for you to tell me about your personal story and then what motivated you to make a career out of it.
For sure. Thank you. My personal story is similar to a lot of people's. I was having a great life raising my kids. My parents happened to live 5 minutes up the road from us and were involved in great grandparents, and it was wonderful. And then things started to shift and they needed more and more help from us, and little things started to happen. My dad got a little sicker earlier. He had had a stroke in his early 60s. And so after a number of years of retirement, started to not be able to golf anymore. So his mobility was limited. Just things started to pile up. And then people were saying to me, "Oh, Christy, your mom, she's very forgetful." And I was like, "No, she's just worried about my dad." Total denial, really common. But I did chase it down a little bit, and my mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and my dad, because of this stroke he had, you know, 20 years earlier, he was having little mini strokes and, TIAs, and really he developed what's called vascular dementia. So it just kind of shows up differently than Alzheimer's, but all of that kind of came together. Meanwhile, my kids are tween and teenager, and I'm working full time as a school psychologist. It was a lot, but I just kind of put some things in motion, and there were different moments of great awareness. And one of the moments of great awareness was when I wasn't really being very patient with my parents, and my kids, who adored my mom and dad, looked at me in horror. And I think my son was the one who sort of mouthed the words, "Mom, you're not being nice." And I thought, oh my God, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm showing my kids about compassion.
Oh, no.
This is crazy. And it was, I love him. I love my son so much. And it wasn't, I didn't feel disrespected. I felt like, good for him for letting me know it wasn't okay, and caring for my mom, because it must have been hard for him to see. So it just was the beginning of me starting to shift how I showed up in the world for my kids and for my parents. But I will tell you this, in my book, one of the things I talk about the most is that my parents had written a lot down. They had made difficult decisions long before they needed to. They both had good experiences with their parents going to assisted living. They did not want to live with me, with my brother who lived in Michigan, or my sister who lived in Montana, and we all lived in Sacramento. And They had long-term health care insurance that would pay for assisted living. They had it all written out. They had a trust. They had saved their money well. I only had to follow the map that they gave me. And that was such a gift to me. And it was also a wake-up call for me and my husband to start doing the same things. Like, we needed to write. We didn't have a trust at this point. And we had teenagers in the house, and we had to put that together because you never know. So that's one of the things I think my clarion call to people is start having those conversations. Now, is that a conversation you want to have at Thanksgiving? Probably not. but plan a time and say, you know, and the thing is, it's not like, hey, mom, let's talk about, you know, when you die. It's hey, mom, let's talk about how you want to live. And we all know that, you know, you're going to age, and what do you need? What would be your best scenario? And what can I do to help you in that time? So it's really about talking about living and how you want to live, not really just about the dying, but putting things down in writing is important.
Thank you for pointing that out. And I'm glad that I have it recorded so I can go back to it, because I would probably be that one that would be like, mom, we got to talk about your dying here. At Thanksgiving. So it's good to know. And I would imagine, how did your parents take it? They had everything really prepared. So did they do the presentation for you then? It was kind of reversed.
Yes. You know what? They actually did. They wanted to be cremated. My dad was a Korean War era veteran. He wanted to be buried at a national cemetery. So they were very open and honest and said, okay, here are the things we've done. We want to let you know about that. And that was what was important. So they sort of role modeled that for me. So that was great. It was brilliant. It really worked. But what I'd say is prepare yourself for that conversation. And I talk about this a lot in the book. Really prepare yourself for that conversation. And one of the things you might do is ask yourself those very questions and think about how weird and uncomfortable it might feel. Or maybe it feels fine, but what's coming up for you, and think about how you can phrase it in a way that you know your parent can hear it. And siblings too, if you have siblings, you know, how do you want to do this? Listen, you might have that one sibling who you don't want anywhere near the money, right? And then you might have that one sibling that you don't want anywhere near mom because they always fight, you know? So you have to think about how you work through your family dynamics, but you prepare yourself for those conversations.
Well, honestly, and I was thinking too, with a lot of those questions, I could have a practice run just with my husband or just myself. You know, there's many of those things you just rattled off that I haven't even thought about. So excellent point. And I think you answered all of my questions without me even needing to ask them. But I do have a few more, if you don't mind sticking around after this short commercial break.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We'll slowly go by and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
Connecting with you on air, online, and on the Civic Media app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM, WLAK, Amory's radio station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. A week after Hamas attacked Israel, killing at least 1,300 people, anticipation is building that Israel is going to invade Gaza. IDF Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus said,
around the Gaza Strip, as have been for many days, are Israeli reserve soldiers in formation that are getting ready for for the next stage of operations.
Foreign citizens in Gaza are now being allowed to exit through Egypt, but thousands still in Gaza say they have nowhere to go. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's in Saudi Arabia.
It's vitally important, and I know that our countries agreed, that we work together to make sure that, to the best of our ability, this conflict does not spread to other places.
There's still no Speaker of the House, as Jim Jordan, the Republican choice, has not yet gotten enough support. And there's a deal in place to end the labor dispute between 85,000 workers in the Kaiser Permanente healthcare chain. This is ABC News.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Time out.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I'm your host, Liza Hallenbrand. I am speaking with author Christy Byrne Yates, who wrote Building the Legacy of Love, Thriving in the Sandwich Generation. So, Christy, I just have to say, I feel like I know that I'm going to be the one that's taking care of my parents. I have good reason to believe my brothers have no idea what to do, or would have no idea what to do, or would dump it on me. I'm the empowered caregiver, right? It's on me. So in that case, you know, when I get there, I'm sure that the time's going to come where I'm going to feel resentful, right? That I am the one doing all of this work while they're out doing whatever. And, you know, other families have other different dynamics. You know, I've talked to people where they seem to bicker and have differing opinions on just about everything. So I wanted to ask you, how do people manage those sibling relationships?
Yeah, those are tricky. And sometimes what happens is when we're back dealing with mom and dad or someone, we revert to who we were at 13 rather than at 35, 45, 55, right? It's so weird. My biggest piece of advice is that if you are stepping up to be sort of the point person, you need to first identify what you need and what do you need from other people. And most people say, well, I need their support. Well, what would that look like? What would it sound like? What would it feel like? And when you can have that kind of very direct conversation, and then that's going to be very helpful. That's hard for some people because maybe you never communicated like that before. Maybe that would feel rude, you know, oh, I can't say that. I can't ask for what I need. But that's the biggest hump that I think caregivers have to face is how to learn to ask for help, but also to be very clear about what they need. No one else can read your mind. They don't know if what they're doing is annoying you or bugging you, or they start to know because you're acting out rather than using your words and saying, here's what I need. When I had those conversations with my brother and my sister and said, this is what I need from you, this is what support would feel like to me, this is what support would sound like, then I got that. And it was easier. And it wasn't that there were never any conflicts. There were, but they were minor. But I could say, this is what I need. They all lived long distance, so I had to do everything. Excuse me, it's not like I had to do everything. I mean, my sister could have handled financial things long distance, right? Everything's online. But that would have hindered a lot of immediate stuff that was just easier for me to handle.
Sure.
So, yeah.
You know, that just made me think. I think my caregiving book, although I'm not qualified to write it, would be communication in caregiving. I mean, yeah. There are so many different avenues in which we have to be successful communicators, whether it's advocating with doctors, having these really hard conversations, lots of hard conversations. And that's just something you're not taught.
Exactly. And we have to practice it. And I think learning to ask for help is a skill. And it's a skill we can learn, we can practice, and we can actually role model for our kids, right? So that's an important thing. And I have a YouTube channel too, and it's just Christy Yates. And I have a little video on there about asking for help. But it's very, you know, first thing is understanding, why are you resistant to asking for help? A lot of times we have these little tapes running through our heads, you know, like, oh, it's better to give than receive. Or, you know, my personal thing that ran through my head all the time is, I have to do everything myself. I have to do it all by myself.
Right.
And I had to learn to change the tape. You know, I had to slide in some new songs on my playlist of, it's okay to ask for help, you know?
That's definitely one thing that I try to say over and over again. You have friends, you have family, you have coworkers, you have people that love you and care about you and want to help you. So ask for help. So thank you for stating that again.
Yeah. And if you think about it, when somebody does ask you for help, doesn't that make you feel okay? Like, oh, like
right?
For some people, it might be, oh, they're asking me again. But many times we're like, of course I'll help you.
Yeah.
So it's okay to ask someone else. Yeah.
I love that. And you're right. You're giving somebody the opportunity to serve and to be there to support you. So you just have to learn to ask for help. But, you know, as a show for caregivers, of course, my focus is on the caregiver perspective. But one thing that there's little research on is the impact of children. And that's another thing as I was kind of, you know, thinking about tonight's show is, wow, I've never really thought that. What kind of number that can do on the children. I know there are a lot of positive things, if you want to speak to that. And then also, what are some things to be mindful for so that the additional stress isn't greatly impacting the children involved?
Yeah, actually, there are studies out there that estimate that there are probably close to 5.4 million children under the age of 18 providing care to an adult or to a sibling in their homes now. And that's due to the high cost of caregiving. People can't afford 24-hour care, so kids are giving care. Kids give care to their parents, kids give care to siblings, kids give care to grandparents, great-grandparents. And it's not all bad, right? A century ago, that's kind of how we lived in right. multi-generational families, right? And we all learned to contribute. So there are a lot of silver linings. It can be things like kids learning resilience. They learn a new skill. They learn how, wow, they might need to cook a meal or, do some laundry or clean a house or something. Mm-hmm. And they're learning how to do that maybe at a younger age than typically right now many households do. But that's because we've let kids get away with not doing
right,
that, right?
Right, right. And even the empathy and compassion building those familial relationships, yes. It gives an opportunity for that might not be there. So I can definitely see some of the positives there. What are some of the things to protect?
Right. Great question, and absolutely important for us to be aware of. And that would be, are your children having opportunities for friendships, for social interaction? Are they having opportunities to engage in extracurricular activities so that they get something else going on in their lives too? Think about your high school student who maybe has to race home from school and then is caregiving for the rest of the evening. That's hard, given that they might be thinking about someday going to college, and they may need to work in doing some groups or extracurricular activities to build their resume, and they might not have the opportunity to do that. But checking in with kids, and those are the things to look for. And I would say, and I am a retired school psychologist, it's important to reach out to the school if you know your child is dealing with something like anticipatory grief, right? So that grief you might have before someone passes away, or that it might just be a lot. And so if your child needs that support from a counselor, hook them up.
Yeah. Definitely. You want to get your child the support that they need so the family is whole. And I like what you said about connecting with them. And then it just made me think, one thing that I tried to do with my other kids is, carve out that separate time or be able to push that pause button. And kind of going back to that communication, having some of these hard conversations with your kids, right? Like, what are your thoughts on this? Like me saying, you know what, guys, this isn't you.
Yes.
I'm feeling a lot of stress right now.
Yes. I told the story of when I wasn't being very patient with my parents, and my kids kind of called me on it. And I became so aware that this was grief that was working in me, right? That I was just, it was so hard for me to see my parents needing so much from me. I became short-tempered and easily annoyed. So I had to talk with my kids, and they were so wonderful. We cried. I talked about how hard it was for me to see them like this. And it's different. They were grandchildren. This was my mom and dad. It was a different relationship. And I just talked about what I was feeling in my heart and what I needed to do differently. And I thank them for standing up for their grandma and grandpa, and for standing up for me, because they were so compassionate with me. They're like, I know, Mom, we know it's so hard for you. And that it wasn't them. When I was short-tempered with them, it wasn't about them, it was about me. And so we had those conversations, really rich conversations, and so important.
Sounds like you have wonderful children. I'm sure that you did a great job. And how are they doing now? I'm curious.
Oh, God, they're awesome.
Yeah. Did they go on to go into caring professions? Where did their journey lead them?
They did not. Actually, my daughter is in Ireland. She did a master's degree in Ireland, and my son works at a university in Ohio as an admissions counselor. But we talk often, we see them. I mean, they're terrific. And they still have grandparents on my husband's side. So they are really good about, even though they're far away, they call often and connect and FaceTime. They're really aware of that. But they're very compassionate. And I think that they are compassionate with other people, and their peers see that and are like, oh, wow, you know, because they do get it. You know, they get that we all are different and we all have needs. And so they're willing to do that. But they're terrific. And that, and you know, and they're still just unique individuals. And sometimes it's just like all of our kids, you know, I'm like, oh, all right, they're having a bad day today.
Yeah. Don't even get me started there. I'm speaking with Christy Byrne Yates, who is a, I'm going to say expert on the sandwich generation. I've went through your website. You really know your stuff. You've done a lot of research and a lot of presentations on this. And I would love for you to be able to share, if somebody is in this situation and they're currently struggling and they want to learn more about you and your services, what do you have to offer and where can they find you?
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And I appreciate you taking the time for this today. Best way to reach me is through my website, ChristyYates.com. And it's Christy with a C-H, C-H-R-I-S-T-Y-Y-A-T-E-S.com. There's a contact button there. I have a number of different services. I do, I work with a lot of employers. So if there are people out there who are feeling like they have a need for support in their company, I do some work where I work with employer support groups or employee resource groups, ERGs, that are designed for parents and caregivers. And I would love to see more of those, because we are losing people in the workforce because they're leaving to go be caregivers. So that's an important piece.
I love that. So, yeah. Actually, yeah. Tomorrow I'm going to be at one of the largest human resource conferences in our state. I'm part of a work group that is putting out information and talking to HR people about creating caregiver-friendly workplaces.
Yes.
So that's something I'm really passionate about. I would love to learn more about your work, because that's exactly what I would like to focus on.
Yeah. Well, that I've been doing a lot of those lately, and that's really great, and I enjoy doing that. People can also join a caregiver support group, and then I have some coaching packages available also.
That is wonderful. You know what? We have less than a minute left, so I'm going to do a power round with you. What are three things you would like all caregivers to know?
Wow, that's good. First one, be gentle with yourself, okay? Treat yourself the way you would treat people you love. And two, you don't have to learn everything. Build a team. And the last one is focus less on expectations and more on intention. How do you intend to show up? Not expectations of everybody else. So, yeah.
Wow, that was an impressive list with such short time. Way to pull it off. Thank you so much, Christy, for joining me tonight.
Thank you so much. Right, thank you, Liza.
Care. Yep, take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
A new head coach.
We got one objective and one goal, is to play for a championship.
A talented backfield.
Braylon Allen does it again.
And a defense that just...
Down he goes.
Won't.
Intercepted. He's gone.
Stop.
Another turnover forced.
Join us Saturday. The Heartland Trophy is on the line against Iowa. Our coverage begins at 1 on your home for Wisconsin football.
WLAK 1260 AM Lake Air Amory.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Hallenbrand. Earlier today, as in a few minutes ago, I was just talking to Christy Byrne Yates. She is a speaker, coach, and author of Building the Legacy of Love, Thriving in a Sandwich Generation. If you missed that discussion, you can hear it again on Saturday or Sunday. If you go to civicmedia.us to find your station's show schedule, and there's so much more on civicmedia.us, which includes all of Wisconsin's top headlines, or some of Wisconsin's top headlines for the day. I just checked it out the other day. I haven't visited in a while. Very useful resource, in addition to listing all the stations and shows across the state. And anyways, speaking of Wisconsin top headlines, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had an article printed on October 9th, 2023, titled "Wisconsin Will Pay Full Tuition for People with Disabilities Who Choose High Demand Careers." Now, this is a timely article, as October is National Disability Awareness Month. And this article goes on to state that there is a state grant program that covers costs like tuition, living expenses, transportation, and assistive technology for people with disabilities who want to work in specific high demand fields. So the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, easy for me to say, the state agency that assists people with disabilities in searching for work, said it typically caps the per-person spending for education and training at about $6,000 annually. But this particular ongoing grant, which just received additional funds last month, removes the funding cap for those pursuing jobs in healthcare, IT, manufacturing, or construction. The Department of Workforce Development Secretary, Amy, you know what, Nate? Do you know her last name? Pacheck?
What department was that?
The Department of Workforce, Department of Workforce Development Secretary. I'm going to just call her Amy because everyone knows I can't do last names. And Nate will search on it, so I'm not messing it up. She said that the program fits with the broader efforts by the state to use workers from underutilized talent pools to fill holes in the labor force. That is one good thing that kind of did open the door for people with disabilities after COVID. Of course, COVID was terrible for everybody, especially those with disabilities that depended on support and care and transportation and everything else and then didn't have it. But with this great exodus, it really opens doors and allows people to, you know, see the value in the talent pool within those with disabilities. You know, having a child with an intellectual disability, I remember my focus on employment very early in my son's life. You know, while most boys were running around outside, I was inside with my son playing pizza shop. We played store. I was a film director back when he wanted to be an actor. So anything that kind of fostered future employment and laid down those skills, we were on it at a very young age. So I'm so grateful that these funds are available to help those people with disabilities get employment. And I'm not the only parent that lays up in the middle of the night wondering about what employment will look like for my disabled child. And not only does this give the person with a disability the opportunity to gain meaningful employment, but from a cost standpoint, you now have somebody that is paying taxes, right? Someone who's contributing to their community. They're more likely to spend their money in their local community, and they stay at their jobs typically for longer periods of time. So, and I know that I'm not the only one sharing this sentiment. Within that article from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which was titled "Wisconsin Will Pay Full Tuition for People with Disabilities Who Choose High Demand Careers," It was said that this is why it is so critical we bring everyone along with us in this type of economy and in this type of labor force, because it not only helps individuals and their families, but it also helps businesses and our economy as a whole. So good for business, good business practice. And if you know from somebody that could benefit from this program, you can learn more at the Department of Workforce and Development's website, which I also posted on my Facebook page. So with it being National Disability Awareness Employment Month, if you would like to hire a person with a disability, there are a couple of different ways that you can go about it. And I know we talked a little bit about this on some previous shows, but just wanted to share with you, there are vocational agencies. A lot of them are looking for people to place people with disabilities in employment. So they will always take your call, the vocational agencies around town, and they will match you with a person that they feel like would be a good fit. You also could call your local high school. They're also almost always looking for employment opportunities for the students within the 18 to 21 transition program. And you know, it's their hope that the student can retain that position after graduation, or at least, you know, it gives them some work experience and something to put on their resume. And probably one of the easiest ways to go about it is just go to the Department of Workforce and Development's website, dwd.gov, and they have steps and buttons and information right there on their website on the steps to take so that you can be employing people with disabilities and helping out the communities and helping out the economy as a whole. If you're a person that would like to share your story, feel free to reach out to me. I would love to hear about some more success stories or stories that point out, you know, some of the challenges and some of the obstacles that are barriers that we still face that you need to work on. So my email address is liza@civicmedia.us. If you have a story that you would like to share about being employed, send me a message. You can find me on my socials, which are Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And I want to thank everyone for listening today. I cannot wait to be at the HR conference tomorrow to be educating people about creating caregiver-friendly workplaces. And next week, we are going to have a spectacular show with some awesome leaders with in the Madison community talking about some of the outcomes and disparities for caregivers in the Black and African American communities. Thank you so much, everyone. I know caregiving is difficult, but you got this. Have a nice night.
A new head coach.
We got one objective and one goal, is to play for a championship.
A talented backfield.
Braylon Allen does it again.
And a defense that just...
Down he goes.
Won't...
Intercepted. He's gone.
Stop.
Another turnover forced.
Join us Saturday. The Heartland Trophy is on the line against Iowa. Our coverage begins at 1 on your home for Wisconsin football.
WLAK 1260 AM Lake Air Amory.
ABC News, I'm Brian.